a pre-recorded version of the WTK Roundtable on WTK, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
Noticed Brian wasn't here, threw his coat in Brian's chair, turned it around, kicked it away from the table. It's like, it's spreading out a little bit.
Brian, we miss you, Brian, if you're listening.
Brian Cook.
We don't miss the sick.
Right, under the weather today, so he will not be a part of today's roundtable, but BC is here in spirit, but in studio, as he is every week, Ed Fang from the Power Rank. Ed, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, Sam. How are you doing?
Doing great, man. So this is a busy time for you with the Super Bowl?
A little bit. I mean, it's busy because my wife's out of town this week.
Ah.
So kids and Super Bowl and trying to get another podcast out for the Football Analytics Show. Just my own personal preview, which I'm pretty excited about. Happy to talk about it today.
Yeah, absolutely. Want to get your take on how much of a chance the Eagles really have in this game.
That's a good question. Hey, Gronk might not play. He's in the protocol.
But
that might give him a chance.
Tom Brady didn't need Gronkowski.
Well, he didn't need him in the second half against Jacksonville.
Tom Brady just needs you, Ed. Tom Brady can throw to anyone out there and win the Super Bowl. That's how it seems sometimes anyway.
I hear you, man. I mean, he's had an amazing season, 4 years old. Busted up hand. Possibly a busted up ligament in the hand, although it really didn't look like it.
And yet he still went out there and performed.
Yep, he did.
Joining us on the phones from Hawaii, Craig Ross. Craig, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great. Hey, did you guys have the weird moon, the blood moon last night? Or was that
Yes, we did, Craig. And it was supposed to hit, you know, the most visible part was right before when I got here and right before the beginning part of the show. Uh-huh. And it was cloudy.
Okay. It was pretty amazing. My wife got me up at 5:30 to go out and look at it. It was this incredibly, the brightest moon I've ever seen. It was silvery almost. And then as it moved to the horizon, it just got redder and redder and redder. It was pretty spectacular. I don't know how much of the country got it, but yeah, clouds are a problem. I guess Ann Arbor in the winter, clouds are ordinary. Is my recall, but I haven't been in Ann Arbor in the winter the last few years.
And so guys, we spent a great deal of time last week talking Michigan State, so we won't spend nearly as much. Just want to briefly.
Really?
I want to touch on something briefly because I want to get to talking more Michigan basketball. I want to talk Super Bowl today. But, you know, Tom Izzo is, you know, he's coaching his team. Has post-game press conferences, he's going to continue to be peppered with questions. Now, it had been my speculation and the speculation of many that he wasn't speaking because he's probably advised by his legal counsel to not say anything. I mean, that a reasonable assumption to make, but it was my position that you should say that. You should offer up something, you should craft something that is informative, at least in that way. Hey, look, guys, you know, I'd like to speak more. Legal counsel has said it's not advisable for me to do so. You know, there are some things that I need to focus on finding out, you know, aside from coaching my team, some things I need to focus on, you know, figuring out as we do some, you know, some introspection here. And we'll speak at a later date. He gives you none of that. His comments to the media are more along the lines of, hey, now is not the time for me to say anything because I don't want to say anything right now. I mean, that's the gist of, I can give you his exact comments. He said, I've always been a fan of the media, but I have my rights too. When time comes, I'll be able to speak out. I know it might be frustrating, but it's just what I've got to do. I think there'll be, and so they said, well, what's the timeline? He said, when the time is right, what's your timeline? He said, well, I think there will be a time when I'll be able to speak, but it isn't right now. There's too many things going on with the survivors and everything. Greg Ross, Ed Fang, when will there be a time where there isn't something going on with the survivors?
Well, I mean, there won't be a time in this. The events of the week were pretty flabbergasting to me. I mean, first you had Hollis resign, which, I thought would happen, but it happened a little quicker than I would have imagined. Then you had Izzo's absolutely pathetic press conference where somebody
which
must
one?
Have told, the one where he denies that he'd ever heard of Travis Walton.
The one after the Maryland game.
Yeah, after the Maryland game, where one of the reporters, wouldn't let it go, and good for her. And on the one hand, he didn't want to say anything, which is, I guess, understandable. On the other hand, he denied knowing anything about Travis Walton, even though Travis Walton is living in his house during the period of time when these events took place. Quite remarkable. Then you had Michigan State appointing John Engler as the interim president of the university. Again, hard to figure out where you would think you would like someone in these circumstances outside of the university and someone with a sort of clean, squeaky reputation. Instead, you got John Engler, Prince of Darkness, who's the tight with the DeVos family, who, Betsy DeVos is not exactly a big Title IX supporter. He's tight with Peter Cechia, who's a big MSU booster, who at one point made comments trying to blame Larry Nassar's victims on the parents of the victims.
And that was
Nassar.
Sick.
I mean, and he's, and Engler and Cechia are tight. And then you've got Engler himself, who was, I think this might have been the biggest judgment ever received against the state of Michigan. There was a lawsuit brought by Deb LaBelle and some other good attorneys from, I think they're all mostly from Ann Arbor, on women in prisons, prisoners being sexually and otherwise abused by prison guards. And as opposed to dealing with this in an honest and straight up way, the Engler administration, and Engler in particular, was turtled up, circled the wagons, was in denial, and they ended up getting a $100 million verdict against the state of Michigan. And so this would not seem to be the sort of person you would want in this particular role at this time. And it doesn't, I'm not happy. I mean, I walk down the street here in my Michigan shirt in Kona, and people conflate Michigan and Michigan State. And they wonder how in the world I could wear such a shirt at this particular point in time. It doesn't really make me happy. So I would like to see them handle it in a way that is a lot better than the way that it's being handled right now. I mean, with Engler coming in, and I think on assistant AD, I don't know Greg Gianni. He may be a good person and terrific at his job. But it seems a little incestuous.
Incestuous is the word we've been using.
And it seems to me that they should be dealing with this in a very different way. And my guess is, we'll see, maybe not. Maybe Engler will do a great job. I don't know. But it seems like what they're doing is turtling up, circling the wagons, and making sure this thing has a life of its own. I mean, you saw Michigan has done this. I mean, Michigan did it in the Ed Martin stuff, and they handled it very poorly. Of course, Penn State, they had a great recent example of how not to handle these sorts of things, and yet they've done worse than could be imaginable, it seems to me. I don't personally see how Izzo or D'Antonio can survive this. Meanwhile, yesterday, Brian wrote a brilliant, the best article I've seen on this, I think from a Michigan perspective at least. I mean, he details a lot, outlines and details a lot of the problems that have gone on there, and it's a good history and an honest history. But then he says, other schools, Michigan included, better look at themselves, and that we're a public institution and we need to be transparent. When they have these sorts of problems, we need not to jerk the media around on FOIA requests. I think a lot of these problems at Michigan State arose, not just because of Nassar, but because they were jerking ESPN around on their ESPN requests. They weren't complying honestly. They weren't complying at all at times. And And so, and Michigan has had some history of some of the same things. So, I mean, and Brian goes through this in a very brilliant way, I believe, and shows and stresses for us as, you know, Michigan fans and for people in, you know, who care about Michigan that, you know, we need to be transparent. We need to handle things honestly and not just circle the wagons when there's problems.
Yeah, you know, I think with this case, I said this earlier this week, even last week, when you look at this Michigan State, we'll call it just all encompassing. We'll call it a scandal. You know, a scandal laden athletic department when it comes to sexual assault. You'd be missing an opportunity if you're an administrator at another school, and you're making this about Michigan State. Like, this is a Michigan State thing, and it's only a Michigan State thing. You should use it as an opportunity first to gather your faculty and staff when it comes to reporting. Like, you know, issues of sexual assault, you should gather all of your people and say, if you hear a shred, a whisper, a murmur of something like this, it needs to be reported. That's the first thing that you do. It was. I mean, you chuck. It seems like a no-brainer, right?
But it's just the right thing to do.
But if you could just do the right thing, you'd be okay. But you can't always assume that everyone is going to do the right thing. So remove all doubt. This is not an ambiguous thing. You hear something, you send it up the chain, and then we'll let the process. We'll take care of the process from there. You do that. And then to your point, Craig, yeah, you know, there is a lesson here in transparency. There's a lesson here about how you deal with things. I think problems are inevitable, maybe not to this magnitude, but they're inevitable. So how you deal with the problems when they come, there's a lesson in that with what's going on at Michigan State right now as well, because speculatively, as I said, guys, maybe Izzo isn't talking because his lawyers are limiting, you know, his commentary on this, right? I mean, D'Antonio went out there, said, you know, maybe he said too much in the eyes of some attorneys, so they're telling Izzo, don't talk. And he's just not telling people that. But he said last night, he said, and they were saying, is there a reason? I mean, is someone keeping you from speaking? Oh, I don't know if I can't, talking about, you know, speak on it. He said, I don't know if I can't. I can do whatever I want to do. I just don't think the right time is right now. It's like, man, really?
Well,
wow.
Yeah, so Izzo has problems with the media. I think we've known this for a long time, right, Sam?
Yeah.
And then I think the Engler thing is politics, which, I mean, politics is going to play a role in some of this stuff. I think the most serious thing I've heard from the last week is about D'Antonio. And the stuff in the ESPN OTL report sounds a lot like Art Briles. And I think that might be the most serious part of what we've gotten out of this last week.
Yeah.
And the fact that is only going to come up in light of the Nassar thing is a little crazy to me.
I don't know that it would have come up anyway.
It was coming up. ESPN's been investigating since 2014. Yeah. They had their fight with MSU over releasing of documents because they've been heavily redacted, and so
they've been
stonewalled by Michigan State for almost four years. You know, it started as an investigation nationally, and they just happened to. They didn't happen to pick Michigan State. They're looking at other schools too. Michigan State will not be the only school that ESPN ends up putting in the crosshairs.
Because 2015 was when the Briles thing went down. So was that? I presume that's related to.
They started looking at 2014. There was how sexual
Department of Education.
It started with that inquiry. Some Title IX stuff.
And so they it was mandatory for all institutions to go back and review.
Right.
That's how they went back over the Brendan Gibbons case, because that had basically run its course. Legally charges weren't pressed, but when the Department of when the feds came in and said, hey, you know, your funding will be at risk if you don't go back and review all of these cases again. Well, there you go. That's how you Michigan, everyone that received federal funding was required to go back and look over these cases. Now, how ESPN made Michigan State one of the schools that they focused on, and why they did, I don't know. But I can tell you that this was not connected to Nassar came about you know, came about. That the Indy Star story and all that really came
later. Yeah.
Came after this investigation had already started. Part of why Michigan State fans are up in arms a bit, because they feel like it was opportunistic of Michigan State or opportunistic of ESPN to release this story about football and basketball on the heels of the Nassar case. It makes it look like it's connected. And I mean, to me, while I understand the sensitivity that they may feel in that regard, I do not lump the other people involved in this scandal in there with that. I mean, certainly, you know, like one of the posters said, well, Tom Izzo and Mark D'Antoni they shouldn't be mentioned in the same breath with Larry Nassar. I agree with that.
They're linked by culture.
Right. And so
that's the most interesting part about this case, right? Is the culture that allowed Nassar to flourish.
Agreed.
Exactly. So, I mean, that's not irrelevant.
That's why it's relevant to let it go now.
Right, you don't put a picture like in a meme. You don't put a picture of Nassar, D'Antonio, and Izzo together. Like, that's irresponsible. That's
pathetic. And they didn't do that.
Right. But, well, I think some people have, which is really sad and pathetic in itself. But because they're not tied together in
their actions.
In the actions, they are tied together by the culture that is surrounded, because the culture that has allowed Nassar to get away with what he got away with is the same culture that allegedly has allowed Izzo and D'Antonio to get away with things too. That's a culture problem. And Ed, you brought up the Engler thing being politics. Sam and I talked about this a lot. We don't look at the Engler thing as being a politics issue. We look at it as a cronyism issue, because these are
they're bringing in Blanchard too. So you got a Democrat.
Yeah, you've got two sides of the aisle that are covered. But the cronyism thing, because
same thing to me, man. I mean, like,
it's, you know, but the tying the politics. Well, I mean, the booster that he's tied with, and there's a cronyism thing that's going on here that's going to make this thing from the outside look like it's not being very independently handled, because it's doesn't look independent at all.
And that's why you see protests going on right now. I mean, you had the student. I mean, there often is a fine line between protest and petulance. But I don't think what we saw with the students at that Board of Trustees meeting was petulance. And I think there were several comments in the comment sections of these articles from some Michigan State folks that's, oh, this is a petulant child. I think here you have a student that was one of many that brought up a very, I think, salient point. You had met with the trustees. They said there was going to be, you were going to be included. There was going to be inclusion of more voices in the process of selecting leadership. And then the next day, you know, the leader is selected. Well, it makes it seem like, more than seem like, I mean, it illustrates the fact that you had already determined who the leaders are going to be without any input from students or faculty. And so if sitting on a table brings more attention to the disconnect there, the protest there, I don't think that's a sign of a petulance. I think that's raising attention. And that's ultimately.
You're just, and then with the protest, you're just giving Craig flashbacks to college.
Yeah, right. And, you know, I think maybe some in the hippie generation might forget, you know, what it was like to be a young protester. Vigilance like that, when you don't have any power as far as administratively, or when you don't have any power. What do they say? They're going to have a vote of no contest. What does that really mean? The faculty, does that really do anything? Is it just a gesture that puts it on the record? The way that you affect things now is through your vigilant protest. You continue to draw attention. You keep the cameras on them. You keep the media there. And therein lies your whatever accountability you can inject into the situation. It's hard to skirt some of the details, or it's hard to maybe shove things under the rug when you got the media's lens focused on you as sharply as it seems to be right now. And their protests are going to keep the media lens there. That's why I say keep it up. Keep it up, because I agree with Ira. I think it's less politics and more cronyism. And that to me is a danger, because if you have all the same people, all of the people that are in this echo chamber that have been there for decades charged with making the change moving forward, well, can you really have faith that the change is going to come?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I didn't mean politics in terms of Republicans and Democrats. I kind of meant more politics in terms of knowing people, and I kind of include cronyism in there.
Yeah, there's a lot of cronyism going on.
Oh, we'll see. Kudos to and let's not paint all Michigan State folks with one brush.
Because no, absolutely not.
There are, I mean, we mentioned the students, we mentioned the faculty. They're pushing back against this. There are Michigan State folks in the media saying, "Hey, even Jemele Hill, who doesn't have many fans around here."
I would start with Jemele Hill with what she's saying, because she's out there more than most Michigan State media types. Now, I'm not going to lump her, because there's the other side of the Michigan State media types, the Hondo, Graham, and Tim Stout category, which is the defiant side. And she's the complete opposite of that. But I would put her as the leader, because she's the most visible, nationally, the most visible Michigan State alum. And she has been at the forefront in the last week or so, really saying, my school needs to fix this.
Izzo had an opportunity with her. He had a real opportunity, because they have a relationship. There's a trust there. And, you know, obviously she's calling Izzo for a story. So, I mean, it's this, no faking the funk there. She's not calling to be a shoulder to cry on. She's calling to get a story, and he knows that. But, I mean, as the guy that you, as the person you think of, when you think Michigan State, you think Tom Izzo. It's just the fact of the matter. So as that person, you know, to get his sense of things, to get his take on why things went wrong or what the solutions may be going forward. That's important. Now, if he can't say anything, and this is kind of what she was getting to, I mean, you can say things to Jemele Hill off the record that she can allude to, not say explicitly, but if your lawyers are holding you back, she can say something like, at times like these, you know, lawyers advise their clients not to speak. So she could kind of craft a picture, but he didn't even offer anything to her, and it's strictly his choice, not being advised by legal counsel or being told by people at Michigan State not to say anything. Is that I don't want to speak right now, so I'm not going to speak. And I don't think that's a dereliction of duty for Tom Izzo.
I think he just doesn't know how to deal with the media. I mean, that's just a behavioral issue.
You know,
I mean, of all the things in this scandal. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's one of the least that we should be talking about, Craig.
Well, no, I think it's incumbent upon the MSU faculty and MSU alumni to say, hey, cowboy days are over. We can't have this culture at our university. We're a great university, and we just can't have this sort of stuff, and we can't have this particular culture. And so they're, and as opposed to just, you know, turtling up, I think they've got to be proactive and say, no, we don't want our culture to be like this. And to me, I don't see how Izzo or Mark D'Antonio can survive that, because I think they have been very much a part of it. And it goes back for a long time with a lot of events. And you know, so they're great coaches. There's no doubt about that, but they're a part of the problem.
All right. We need to get a break in here. We'll take a call on this right now. Let's go up to Lansing and talk to Mark. Mark, what's up?
What's up, fellas?
Hey, Mark.
Hey, Brian, I need to talk to you off
the record. Brian is not on this morning.
Oh, he's not there?
Nope.
All right. Well, I need to talk to Brian off the record anyway. And Craig and all you other guys. I talk to Sam too much. the culture thing, clearly with the assault, when it comes to MSU and the culture with regard to Nassar, unless you want to loot prosecutors, police officers, parents, gymnastics, gymnasts, etc., all into this culture, then I can't do that. Michigan State got duped just like everybody else got duped. We had a victim come up yesterday, who was giving her victim statement in court yesterday in the matter out in Eaton County, and she filed a police report back in 2004, and there was an investigation done in NASA way back then, and the NASA convinced the police officers that what he was doing was medically legitimate, and I see that as carrying the day when it came to a lot of sentiments when it came to NASA. So I'm not going to necessarily settle in on a culture.
Mark, I disagree. I disagree. Wholeheartedly. I'll let you finish, but this is I agree with you that there are legitimate reasons for Michigan State to have kept Larry Nassar on in the early days of this, of the complaints about him. And, you know, you're right. He's the Olympic doctor. He comes highly recommended. Everyone's getting duped. My issue is that when you have a series of complaints, you know, 6, 7, say, it's not that you throw the alarm bells off and say, we got to get this guy out of here. We got a predator. What you do in that scenario, though, is there should at least be some monitoring. And there is no sign that upon having a number of complaints that they at least put some monitor on him. You can't ensure that he is, you know, conducting these procedures in a way that fits with protocol. You can't make sure that the guy's wearing gloves. You can't make sure that another medical professional is in the room. That can go on for 20 years unchecked. That's falling down, man.
I think that's bleeding the discussion.
How is that bleeding the discussion?
Because they can be negligent. That's different than willfully turning a blind eye, which I think is what you're saying about the basketball team and suborning a guy. They eventually settled in on some practices. I don't want to get
We are still saying the same thing. You're trying to make it sound like it's a distinction without a difference, and there is a difference. The reason why this is still a cultural deal is, why was there negligence? Is it because it was a girl's sport? It's a girl's sport. That's part of the reason why. I mean, sure, he's a doctor, but if you had football players complaining about a trainer, you know, feeling them up, there would have at least been some monitoring of it. Maybe you don't fire him if he's, you know, the Olympic guy and whatever. But if someone would have been watching the guy, no one even watched him, Mark. No one, you get some complaints and one's even watching.
And Mark, I just want to jump in here. Like, I think we don't know. I mean, I think it's reasonable to agree about whether this is a cultural thing in Michigan State or not. But if the number of victims were in like the 20s, I would be more likely to agree with you. But when the number of victims gets in the hundreds, that just makes me think that it's more than just the doctor that is duping people, right?
Once again, we got to be discriminating, man. There were maybe a hand, maybe a dozen that had connections to MSU. I'm not talking about a bunch of this discussion has brought in a bunch of different issues. And lumped them all in to whatever the convenient target is. I'm a little bit more discriminating than that. But let me get on to another. Sure. Let me get into another topic. The dereliction of Tom Izzo. I don't think Tom Izzo, given the situation that they're in as an institution, given what's going on in the environment right now in the community, given how words are being twisted and manipulated and everything else, I don't blame Tom Izzo for not saying squat. And maybe that's the lawyer in me coming out saying, don't say nothing unless you have to, and that comes from my criminal defense work. But this constant pressure, trying to get Tom Izzo to answer questions that you know he's not going to answer.
Well, look,
and then trying to make a big deal out of it.
No, dude,
it's unfortunate.
Therein lies the burden of leadership. You can't handle it, don't be a leader. I mean, that's the crown. Heavy is the head that wears the crown. You're the king of Michigan State. People think of you when they think of that school. Tone and direction are important, and you are a part of setting it. I mean, it's easy when you're talking about winning in sports. This is the time where the leadership is truly tested. This is the true test of leadership in times of adversity. And now is the time where you back away and don't want to speak and don't want to lead. 9:35 on a Thursday. We'll get more phone calls, emails, and tweets. We'll get some, to some sports talk too. Here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, the T. We have Ed Fang in studio from the Power Rank. We have Craig Ross on the phone. He's in Hawaii. You're writing writing your next book out there, Craig? Is that right?
I am working on another book, History of Football Prior to 1900, which is amusing but hard to hard to find stuff on because there just isn't a lot written. So in any event, but it's coming along. I've written 40 or 50 pages since I've been here. So.
You make it sound like it's just something that you wish you just didn't have to do. Craig's books are good. He's a good writer, folks. Pick up Craig's books. I've seen Diaries of a Michigan fan, and then the other one. Let me see if I can get it all out.
No one knows.
Search for a Unified Field Theory Football Version by Craig Ross. Is that right?
That's correct.
Perfect. There you go.
Thanks, Al.
There you go. So pick them up, folks. All right, let's go back to the phone, 734-998-1050. Let's go out to the OC and talk to Dennis. Dennis, you're on the Michigan Insider. What's up?
Hey, Sam, and fellas, a great conversation. And I am reminded, the great Brian Cook isn't there, but, he got involved when we had the situation regarding our athletic director and regarding regents and that sort of thing. And I'm just going to mention that people might want to try to have some sort of an impact on this in a different manner. If you finally become a precinct delegate, you do play a role in the selection of people who are like the regents for Michigan and the trustees of state on the Board of Governors of Wayne State, and also interact with these other people who then run for attorney general and these other offices. And it's possible that some folks might want to take that step for various reasons, but this, I think, is an area that really has people quite fired up, obviously, because it's a horrible situation there, and we're talking about, you know, the culture and what happens in governance at the universities and that sort of thing. This might be something to consider, and I was just the filing deadline for that is apparently May 8th at 4 p.m., so that's something that some folks might want to look at because they might want to get involved in having some input, some impact on what's happening there at an official level. And, of course, this station is a great source for information on just what's going on there. So I wanted to thank you, Sam, and Ira, and the roundtable people, everybody who's bringing up some great points about this. So keep up the great work. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call there, 734-998-1050. Let's go back up to Lansing and talk to Dave. Dave, what's up?
Hey, Sam, how you doing this morning?
Doing great.
Good. Listen, when we talk about the culture of Michigan State, a culture is defined by behavior. And behavior that can be quantifiable and empirical. And I think the behavior at Michigan State with Nassar, with the football team and all of that, basketball team, has been quantifiably defined. Now, as it relates to Izzo and D'Antonio and Izzo not wanting to talk, Izzo is walking in two lanes. He has a legal responsibility and he has a leadership responsibility. The problem is, legally, he shouldn't talk. But as a leader, he needs to talk. He needs to make a decision. Is he going to continue to be a leader? Then he has to now jeopardize himself from a legal point of view. If he's not going to be a leader, then he needs to abdicate his position and just deal with it from a legal point of view. And I think the Larry Nassar thing, there is a connective tissue. I know what they're trying to do down here in East Lansing is to extricate and put it in its separate silo. But it's part and parcel to the entire culture. And that culture includes law enforcement. It includes the athletic department. It includes the community itself. Some of the calls you get from East Lansing, it bespeaks of that insular attitude that is everybody and everybody's doing this. And this is not how it is. This is where it is. And that's the problem that you have at Michigan State. And in my opinion, I like Izzo. I can't stand D'Antonio. But the whole lot from top to bottom needs to be cleaned up because of this culture. And that's how I feel about it.
Thanks for the call there, Dave. 734-99.
Well said, incidentally. I mean, I have a lot of respect for Mark Dotson, but I agree with Dave. I mean, that was well said.
734-998-1050. Let's talk to Eric in South. And real quick, I guess, you know, Mark, that's my guy. That's my man. But if you allow the they got duped narrative to pass, you're suggesting that there's nothing they could have done. I mean, it's, you know, it's just, he duped them for 20 years. It's just, you know, this could happen anywhere. No, I do not accept that. I agree that, hey, a couple of accusations, 3-4 accusations even, that doesn't automatically make you leap to we have a predator or we have a sexual predator on our hands. When you, of course, you know, a doctor, renowned doctor, everyone in the country is saying this guy is the best. So I'm with you there. Where you lose me is when there is no response. When you have a series of complaints, at the very least, there needs to be some response in the way of monitoring. And then someone else, I mean, if you're looking at them, then you can assess whether or not something is wrong. But if you aren't even looking at them, you for 20 years, he's doing exams with no gloves, with no one else in the room, and no one threw the flag up, sounded the alarm bells. That's a problem. That's falling down on the job. That is a failure of leadership. And it's I don't care. Yeah, sure, he duped you in thinking that he was in it as a medical professional, but that does not absolve you of your responsibility to monitor him once you start getting those kind of complaints. And they didn't do it. Let's go back to the phone, 734-998-1050. Let's talk to Eric in South Carolina. Eric, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, gentlemen?
Nothing much.
Sam, I think the first thing that's getting lost in this is people fail to realize how hard it is for the victims to actually admit or report this stuff. It takes a lot of courage for these girls to come forward and say, hey, this guy did this. Because of who he is, I told you before, like with child molestation, what devastates this child more is the relationship, who the person is, and how long the person does it to him. So the reason why I say I wholeheartedly agree with you that it's a culture thing is look how they responded to it. Even after they knew it was something, just imagine how these girls felt. I believe they told these girls, hey, just be quiet or just go away or, you know, that didn't happen. I believe because look at their response to it. After they knew something, they might not know what exactly was going on, but they knew something was going on. And Enzo kind of opened up Pandora's box. You and Ira, all of us are boys. But if 10 girls come out and say, hey, farewell, or Ira, you know, Ira Rodgers or Eric Tarver did such and such to me, you guys are not going to come on the radio. It's 10 of them, not 100 or something, but 10 of them came out and I'm making national news and I done did this stuff. You guys are not going to come on the radio and say, hey, I got your back, Eric. We got your back. No, y'all ain't let me babysit Gracie. Y'all ain't let me babysit Quincy. You guys, and even if you guys don't believe it's true, you ain't gonna let me keep the kids until you know for a fact there's 10 people lying on me. And that's just, you know, that's unfathomable. I just can't. He had an abuser living in his basement. He had two rapists on his basketball team that didn't miss a game. He opened up that's the reason why they're on him. You see, ain't nobody really messed with D'Antonio.
Okay, so it's a alleged abuser, alleged rapist. Let's
very
be clear.
Important. Very,
very
important.
Important to draw those distinctions there, Eric. But I agree that in the position that he's in leadership-wise and without restrictions from legal counsel, he said last night he can do whatever he wants to do. He just doesn't think the right time is to speak. Now, that means that, you know, he needs to, I think, help with the tone. Help with the accountability tone. If he's not restricted legally, and it could be as simple as, look, we have some things that we need to look into and address. You know, I got some things I need to look into. Hey, that could suffice. But what he's offering right now, he's offering you nothing in the way of explanation, nothing in the way of the reason for why, other than he just doesn't feel like this is the right time, and he's not offering you when the time will be right. I mean, he's giving you nothing in the way of leadership on this when that is the position he's in. Let's rough segue because, look, the Super Bowl is Sunday. Yeah. We haven't said one word about it. So let's get to that in the last few minutes of the show here, guys. And let's start with you, Ed. What kind of chance does Philadelphia really have in this game?
Not a ton for me. They're playing Nick Foles, who is not as good as Tom Brady.
Right.
Everyone's excited about Philadelphia with the way Foles played against a very, very good Minnesota defense, and I get that. But I feel like it's a lot of the same thing we saw 2 years ago with Cam Newton. Came into the playoffs on fire. Cam Newton had an MVP season. Came into the playoffs on fire, destroyed a very good Arizona defense heading into the Super Bowl. Everyone thought Carolina was by far and away going to win that Super Bowl against Denver. didn't. And I see a lot of similarities. I do want to touch on the pass defense a little bit because, you know, they've been a much maligned unit. But a lot of that happened the first eight games of the season. And Stephon Gilmore wasn't playing well. He actually had a concussion. He came back in their ninth game. And since then, they've actually been the sixth-ranked pass defense in my numbers when you just look at those games. The unit's been much better. I don't know. I think they're going to give – I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if New England ran away with this game.
Really? So you look at on Philadelphia's side, you're right. Nick Foles is not – he's not nearly as good as Tom Brady, but Nick Foles has the best offensive line in football, and he has a trio of good backs to carry the mail. You know, all the pressure isn't on Nick Foles in this game. Now I'm with you. I think New England's going to win this game. I think it's going to be all about Tom Brady. But is it ridiculous to think that, you know, they're offensively that they could go out there and maybe control things a little bit, you know, run the football, take some shots with play action. And Nick Foles, I mean, he's not some bum. He's a Pro Bowl quarterback. He was a Pro Bowl quarterback a few years ago, right?
2013, Sam.
But he has it in his. I mean, this is not Case Keenum.
Well, Case Keenum had a ridiculous season this year.
I know he did. I know he had a ridiculous season this year. My thing is, you saw Nick Foles go out and outplay Case Keenum last week, and he actually has a Pro Bowl season on his resume where he was the guy.
He looked like a future Hall of Famer.
That I think that season he had, what, 27? I mean, as good as Case Keenum was this year, Nick Foles, I think that year had 27 touchdowns and two interceptions. Yeah, something ridiculous like that.
It was insane. And obviously something that he could not sustain for his career. Otherwise, he would actually be starting for someone. I mean, Jason Peters is hurt on that offensive line,
and
right?
And they still were rated the best offensive line in football without Jason Peters. That Pro Football Focus just put that out last week.
All right.
Best offensive line in football.
The running game, I don't know, 3 yards a carry the last two playoff games. So, I mean, the offense just doesn't. I mean, you just think about this game. You think about what they got in Philly. I don't know. It just doesn't scare me. If you're a New England fan,
yeah, I'm picking New England in the game too. I'm just trying to. I'm trying to find some reasons to give Philadelphia.
I mean,
some
this
hope
is
here.
The crazy thing. The Eagles have been a dog in those two home playoff games, and I think that was right. And all of a sudden, we see one game from Foles, and we're like, oh man, the Eagles are going to win the Super Bowl.
And that game turned on a pick six. They never recovered.
Right.
Never
recovered. Well, I mean, Foles was great beyond that pick six, right? I mean, he threw for, I mean, something insane, 11 yards an attempt or something like that. He had a great game.
I look at their receivers, and they just don't strike.
There you go.
But hell, New England's receivers shouldn't strike fear in you either, so.
Yeah. Well, and Gronk is still in the concussion protocol.
Right. Right. Craig Ross?
I lean to Philadelphia.
Of course you do.
I mean, it's stupid probably to bet against Tom Brady. I certainly lead to Philadelphia with the points. I think, what is the line? 5.5?
No. It's down to 4. Absurd.
Too low. I'll take the points. I like the Philadelphia defense a whole lot. I don't think the Patriots offensive line is particularly good. I think the Eagles defense is very good. I mean, perhaps betting against Tom Brady is a way to lose all your money, but I see this as a close game. I see it as a field goal game, and at least with the line, I would take the Eagles.
Yeah, I give props to the Eagles defense for sure.
Yeah.
They've been great all season.
Yeah, their work is cut out for them against the greatest of all time, and it's amazing. Yeah. I mean, you look at what he did. Comeback was completed without Gronkowski.
Yep.
I mean, who is against a very good defense. Arguably the best defense in the NFL.
Yeah.
I mean, they can rush the passer. They have tremendous guys on the back end.
Mm-hmm. Two Pro Bowl cornerbacks.
That's just – and he went out there and
got it done.
Just put it this way. I think he saw a better defense when they played Jacksonville. That's what I think.
Wait, what? Say again?
I think Tom Brady saw a better defense than the one he's going to see in the Super Bowl.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, no disrespect to the Eagles defense. Mm-hmm. I think they're gonna put up a fight, but
I'm gonna tell Brandon Graham you said that, Sam.
I love BG too. That is my dude. That is my dude. But that this is what it is.
Yeah.
You know, they went out. Who knew that their free agent, all that money they had in free agency was gonna be so. I thought maybe they were just trying to put butts in the seats, but it's proven to be functional. They put together a great defense. They drafted well around the free agent acquisitions. And showed how it can be done. Hope my Lions were taking notes. Real quick yeah. Thoughts, guys. Blake Griffin to the Pistons. any thoughts on what kind of impact he will have on Detroit's positioning in the East?
I hope
tell
he
me how many games he plays.
True.
I mean,
that's a good point.
I mean, he's a fine player, but he, you know, he's always hurt. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't love him as a player. I think he is exciting, and I hope he puts people in the seats in Detroit. But long term, I don't really like the acquisition.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess I don't.
Too many mid-range jumpers. Like, just not good enough on defense. Like,
what's the alternative though?
Tobias Harris.
Tobias Harris. So Tobias Harris's deal is coming up, and I think in a year, are you going to make Tobias? Are you going to pay Tobias Harris $20+ million a year? I mean, and Avery Bradley's going to be a free agent. You're going to overpay to re-sign Avery Bradley, and then your big contingent for now and into the future is going to be Reggie Jackson, Tobias Harris, Avery Bradley, and Andre Drummond. And that's going to be
– hey, we were very excited about that unit 25 games into the season,
Sam. And we saw that excitement was foolish. It was premature. So Michigan, Minnesota, if I had told you before the season that Minnesota was going to be the 11th team
– I wouldn't have been shocked.
You wouldn't have been shocked. You would have been the only one.
I thought Minnesota and Northwestern last year were teams that played way above their level.
Hold on. I don't have any. Let me make sure that I got this stat right. They are 11th in the league, aren't they, Mr. Weintraub?
They're around there. They're not 11th. They're right around there.
Is it 9?
They're in the bottom part.
11.
Yeah, but they're in the bottom part, very solidly in the bottom part.
How are you not surprised by that? I mean,
so the way I think about it is, like, you look at the Pacino trajectory, and, like, he had a good year last year. I mean, they made the tournament. Similar to Northwestern, right? Like, these teams that are, like, coming out of, you know, not a good stretch of basketball.
But Minnesota had most of their guys coming back. This is before the Lynch suspension.
Right.
But they had most of their guys coming back.
So
they were predicted to be, and both teams were predicted to be in the top 4 or 5 in the league. And they're both going to be in the bottom 5 in the league.
Right. I mean, it's a little surprising, but I'm not shocked.
Wow.
I mean, I don't understand.
If I thought they would revert back, I thought they would maybe be more towards 500, but they're so far below.
Right. Okay, 11th is maybe a little bit low, right? But I didn't necessarily expect these teams to challenge for the league title like a lot of people thought.
Far backwards is the surprise. Like, you're still surprised that far of a reversion.
Right. No, and like, what is wrong with Northwestern's defense? I mean, how many open shots did they get?
Apart.
Well, and not only that, and Duncan Robinson went 0-for-6.
Yeah, they missed. Yeah, they missed. Like, that Michigan actually played a pretty good offensive game ball movement. They just missed shots.
Michigan
that were open.
Was brilliant in dissecting that zone.
They just couldn't make the shots.
Couldn't make shots.
I'm excited that Northwestern's on schedule again. I mean, I don't know what is wrong with that team, but
you want to play them again?
I do. Even there.
You know that there, by the way, is the Rosemont Horizon because they're building redoing their gym, and the women's team is playing at a high school gym in Evanston, but the men are playing at Rosemont Horizon, the home of the Paul.
All right, that'll do it for us. Yeah. Super Bowl picks. Oh, you're picking New England, Craig. You're picking Philly. Is that right?
I'm picking Philly. At least, yeah, I'll pick Philly straight up. What the heck? But but certainly with the points, I'll take Philly.
All right, folks, you heard it here.
did better than